I mean, what we're asking you to do is saying, look, you have a certain way of living. You've lived this way all your life, whether it's 18 years or 20 years or 30 years, and your ego is attached to this way, and you see it as the best possible way. Gives you security, and then this is the way you look at life. And suddenly we come along and we say, look, we're going to show you that that's incorrect, and now you have to change. And that's not an easy request. And we need to make that change to our emotions, and every human being has to do it. If they're going to make the change, they have to answer every question that the in other words, you have to listen to your emotions. Every desire of the emotion has to be answered. Every time the emotion is awakened, you must answer it logically again and again and again. And it takes, some people it could take weeks, some people it could take years. But the going over of the idea, when I say going over the idea, it's the idea that the emotion is fighting against, and you must answer that idea rationally. Okay? So what I wish to do is show you some of the arguments and show you how to deal with it, okay? Okay, now, the subject that we're dealing with is seeing that ideas are real, and we must act upon these ideas, and even though I see that I must protect myself for 10 years down the road, so I know that I don't want that pain. The person knows that, but the emotion doesn't, okay? So we say that if you do not follow these ideas, you're going to fail. Okay? Okay. Well, yes.
So are you trying to prove this, what are you saying?
No, I'm not trying to prove it rationally. Rationally, I know you all know it.
Right.
I'm trying to answer what your emotions, in other words, I'll give you an illustration now, okay? All right. Your mother tells you if you go out without a coat in the winter, you're going to catch a cold. Sure enough, you all sweat it up, you take off your coat, you're playing basketball, and you play for 3 hours in the cold, in the rain, in the snow, and you come home and you don't catch a cold. You see? It does happen. So there you go. So you say, well, you have to plan for the future. Well, look, you see, it doesn't always work.
Yeah, the emotion grabs onto that one incident.
All right.
And that's like the proof for the emotion.
All right, but it's not only one incident. I'm sure you could tell me 10 incidences. You see? So we have to understand what we mean that if you don't follow the ideas and you don't listen to it. But I want you to know your emotions stick to this. And there's a few other points we will show around that the emotions stick to very small things, but you must answer it if it's going to become real to you. Okay? And the first thing is that you have to know that failure is not immediate. You know, when God created the world, He created it with din. Din, what does din mean? As soon as you do something wrong, you're dead. Well, if God kept that way, the world would have ended by Adam. So therefore, He introduced a thing called rachamim. Rachamim. What is rachamim? He entered this in the laws of nature, that even though you make an error, you will not get the consequence immediately. And He gives you a chance to do tshuva. And there are two types of ways. There's two ways that a person gets failure, not immediately. And you'll see that I believe that every failure is going to fit into one of these two. And one of them, there's such a beautiful illustration in the Navi that I decided to use that as an illustration. This is in Shoftim. It's Perek Yates. Okay, I'll go. It's a whole parak, so I'll go through very fast, just the highlights, the interesting points. It says, it was in the days when there was no king in Israel, and there was a man for the name of Levi, and anyway, he had a wife, a Pelegish. And one day he got upset with her, it bothered him, you know, so he threw her out. Okay, threw her out. Okay. Now I'm not going to go through the whole story and define the whole thing. I'm going to go each step. Okay? So So the thing is that this is a guy that immediately gets angry. He acts out his emotions, okay? He got angry, he threw her out, goodbye. 4 months later, his anger is over, and he remembers the good times that he had with her, that he really enjoyed her. So it says he got up, the man went out, got up, and he went after her. Okay, and he decided to talk her into, he's going to try and talk her into coming back. And meanwhile, she lived in a different state. So he packs his donkeys, and he goes after her. Meanwhile, the father-in-law finds out he's coming. His father-in-law comes out to greet him. His father-in-law wants the guy, likes the guy. And his father-in-law keeps him there 3 days. They party. They party for 3 days, him and his father-in-law. On the fourth day, the guy gets up and he wants to leave. And the father of the daughter of the woman says, stay and eat another day and then you'll go. So they sit down to eat again. They eat and drink. Okay. So the guy wants to get out after the party. At the fourth day, they had a party. That day, he wanted to leave. So it says that the father-in-law pushes him to stay, and he sleeps over. Comes the fifth day, the guy wants to go home. Father-in-law says, come on, have a drink or something. Have a little kiddush here in the morning. And we have a yahrzeit today, you know. So he says, come on, hang around and have a little bit to eat. And he waits till around the turn of the days, like 1-2 o'clock. And the man gets up to go, and he takes his wife, his Pelegesh. And the father again says, he says, it's the turn of the day. Doesn't try and talk him into it, stay and party. Doesn't urge him. He tells him a rational thing. Says, turn of the day, you won't make it back. You know what I mean? You're going to have to sleep over. And he says, you're better off sleeping over here, and you'll get up in the morning and leave early. The man refuses. He absolutely refuses. It's a rational argument, especially in those days. They didn't have motels. So he says he refuses, and he gets up and he goes away. You see? Now, what was that step? That step is that there's certain people that have a weak emotion. And under pressure of others, they do things that they don't want to do, you see. But the under emotion, what they want to do is still there. And at a certain point, it breaks out, and without rationale or anything, he must do it then, you see. He's constantly controlled by people around him. And then, but when his desires break through, he goes out. Sometimes you see that. Like they say, when somebody gets up and shoots 20 people down, then they ask the family, they ask the people, what type of person? Oh, the nicest guy, you never heard a peep out of him. That's true, you never did, because he controlled his anger. But that anger was building up, you see, and at a point he broke loose. So the thing is that each step he follows, first he follows his emotions, he gets angry, he throws her out. He desires her, he comes back. Then again, he has a passive personality. He can't stand up. He listens to the father-in-law. But meanwhile, he really wants to go. So he breaks through and leaves in the middle of the day. Okay? So he refuses and he goes. Meanwhile, comes nighttime. Soon nighttime, they're traveling. So the guy says that he had a servant with him, a manservant. The guy says, look, there's a city here that the Yavusi have. Says, let's go there. His man says, no, I will not turn aside to a Goyish city that's not from Bnei Yisrael. And I'm going to go to Giva. And Giva was a Jewish city, right? So the thing is that he didn't investigate anything, right? There's a certain feeling that there's certain people that are my friends, that I identify with. There's certain people I don't identify with, you see. Now, I don't trust the person I don't identify with, and I do trust the person I do identify with, right? And that could be dangerous. Sometimes it's true, but I would check it out, you know what I mean? Even the Pirkei Avos, it says, when they talk about people of Klal Yisrael, it says, Chabdeo v'chashdeo, you know? But here was a prejudice on one side, and on the other side, I feel secure with my kind, without thinking, right? Again, this guy just is drawn by the immediate emotion from place to place. Right? So they went to the one that didn't give up. Okay? And the sun was going down. And they were sitting in the center of the city. Now, in those days, they had no motels. So they would wait for somebody to invite them in. And everybody knew, especially by Israel, they were Achnasas Archim. They would invite him in. He went to the wrong city. Nobody invited him in. Now, one person, yeah. You want to ask a question? What? Yeah, that's true. It's probable. It's highly probable. Yeah, that could be. Could be. That's fine. I thought of that possibility. Yeah, it could be. Could be, you're right. I don't know. Right, it could be. I'm not arguing. Okay? Could be. But anyway, nobody invites him in. Stuck out there. And, by the way, this was the town of Binyamin. Binyamin was known that they were different. Slightly different. They were tough people. There's a few stories about the tribe of Binyamin. Anyway, meanwhile, there was a guy that happened to immigrate to the city. He came from Ephraim. So he sees these guys, and he says, what are you doing here? And, of course, they have a little discussion here. But anyway, he says, please come in. The guy says, look, I'll pay for whatever I eat or sleep. He says, no, come in, and he invites him in. Okay? All right. Anyway, they eat. Again, they eat and drink. They have a little party there, right? All right. What? This guy knows all the right people. Okay. Anyway, he's partying there. All of a sudden, the motorcycle gang comes around this, around the house. And they say to the old man that invited them in, he says, bring out this man and let us know the guy. Want to know the guy? Okay, send him out. And the man goes out and he says, no, my brothers, please don't do this evil. And this is like already like... Saddam, yeah, by, what, this one, there's no angels, no, right? All right.
This is a Jewish city, okay?
He says, please don't do this evil thing. He says, I'll even give my daughter a basula out, the guy says. Same idea. But what the traveler does, he realizes that these guys are really hepped up. So he takes his pelegesh and throws her out. Right? Okay, you see, again, the emotion immediate without thinking, he throws her out. And what happens is they take her and they gang rape her a whole night. Okay, and then they throw her out. That's it, they're finished, they throw her out. She crawls all the way to the door of where her husband is, and she falls right, she can't make it, and she falls with a hand stretched out over the doorway, right? Just in front of the doorway, right? Door's closed. Anyway, in the morning, the guy gets up and he wakes up and he opens the door and there's the woman standing out there. Right? He says to her, get up and let's go. He's in a rush. He wants to get started. There's no answer. Yeah, he takes and puts her on a donkey. She's dead already. Doesn't say she's dead. It's an interesting thing. Doesn't say. But anyway, he picks her up, puts her on the donkey, and he carries her back to the city. And then he takes her and he cuts her into 12 parts and sends each part to another tribe to tell the story. And this began a civil war that the whole tribe of Binyamin, except for a few men that escaped, it was those few men that brought back the tribe of Binyamin. Not the tribe of Binyamin would not be in existence. Okay? But that's as far as we go, okay? But the thing is that that's one type of a failure. A person, yes.
Would you say the failure began when he threw her out at first, but that set the stage for
the failure is that a person, it is one type of person that's drawn by the situation. Every situation awakens that emotion, whatever the situation is, it awakens the emotion, and he follows the emotion. You see? Just the situation, he follows the emotion. There is no shita, no opinion. Whatever the situation is, that's his opinion. Okay? A wealthy guy says, look how wealthy I am, look how smart I am. The poor man prays to God. The child says, look at my parents, they're vicious and they don't think of me. And then this guy becomes a parent and then he does the same thing to his kid. It's just the same, it's just you make your decisions based on who you are. I know a guy that was a student of mine, and then he went to camp and he was like the head counselor for a few weeks. They didn't have a head counselor. He took over for a few weeks. The guy was so tough, I couldn't believe this is the same student that's fighting me every day in class. He wouldn't, I was I was an easygoing guy compared to this guy. I was glad I wasn't in camp as a camper. This guy was tough. And then after that, they had a head counselor and he became a regular counselor. The guy went back to his old ways overnight like that. Just the situation, just guided by the situation, you see. Now the thing is, if that's what happens, you say, well, nothing bad is going to happen to me. But the fact is, you never know when that situation is going to come that your reaction is totally going to destroy you or to destroy a tremendous amount of people around you. You just don't know because you only react to the situation. That is the first type of failure. So therefore, even though your failure might not be for 5 years or 10 years, that destruction, because of that, will come about. Okay? Because you just act. The situation awakens an emotion, and you react to it. And I want you to know, if you ask this guy, if this guy was here, we'd ask him, did you act according to your emotions? He would say, absolutely not. He thought it. He'll tell you a reason. He'll have a rationalization. Nobody says I did anything for my emotions. But the thing is, you have to really analyze it, how you're making your decisions. That's one type of failure. You just never know when it's going to hit. Okay? The odds are, I mean, let's put it this way, you're just lucky if it just never does. But the odds are it will. Okay? That's one type of failure. Okay? The second type of failure... Yes.
Most people fail. Most people follow their emotions.
Yeah, but there's two types of emotions. One is where the situation dictates what emotion is going to be used at any particular time. The situation dictates how I'm going to act. It's going to lead to some situation where I'm going to react in a stupid way that's going to destroy me. Or somebody dear to me, or people around me. I never took a survey. I'll tell you the two types and you tell me. You take the survey.
Well, if most people reacted in that type of way, so you would say most people are failures?
I don't know, those people that act that way, there will be a situation that will destroy them.
That situation might never come up. I mean, this guy,
yeah, it's a possibility, but in... Right. That's possible. In other words, it's possible to play Russian roulette and that you have five empty chambers. You have five empty chambers and only one full one. It's possible that you won't blow your brains out. It's possible. It's possible, yeah.
I want to know what people
do with that
failure.
No, I'm saying, by failure, see, you have to understand, I'm not just... See, when we say failure, we're not interested in just labeling somebody a failure. We're saying that he's going to have to suffer the consequences. It's a practical thing. It's not an ego-breaking thing. Oh, you're a failure. You know what I mean? We're not pointing fingers of your failure. We're saying you're going to have to pay the consequences. If you raise your child by according to emotions, you react to the child every time the child does that, and you only react to the child. the odds are that you're going to react and that you're going to chase your child away, or you're going to cause problems to the child where you'll suffer later. Well, you see, he does stupid things, and that'll bother you. You're going to pay the price. You're going to pay the consequences if you only react. In other words, many times parents raise their child, they react to certain situations. Child runs in the street. I don't want you crossing the street. It's very dangerous, right? Then the next day, the child spills water on the brand new floor and mixes in some mush there, right? The parent beats the kid up, right? Now, you don't realize it, but you taught the child a very interesting principle, that dirtying the house is worse than playing in traffic in the street. Now, it's very possible that you might suffer because of that principle that you taught your child. You just reacted. Okay. And that's the first failure, okay? The second type of failure is a person has a very powerful emotion that he isolates that emotion and lives according to that emotion. Let's say greed, right? Person starts out, well, I have to make a living for my family. So he gets involved. He goes to college because he has to make a living, or he learns a trade because he has to make a living. But the thing is what he starts attaching is the greed, you see. Then the next thing is that he gets into business and he starts making money. It's not that he's not making enough money for the family, but the greed makes him go further. Then the thing is he'll cheat, you see. He'll cheat a little bit in business, a little further. And he's making millions of dollars, but it's not enough. He has to cheat more and more until he'll pay the consequences. He'll go down. In other words, the greed takes him very, very far down the road. Okay? But before I tell you what the consequences are, this one I have to subdivide in two types of consequences. Okay? There's two types here. Okay? There was a story about the basketball players, okay? Some of the best basketball players making millions of dollars, they wanted to invest their money, and they gave it to somebody that they trusted. Meanwhile, the guy lost all the money. So the thing is, they were very successful insofar as playing basketball, but because they don't look at the whole picture of life, and they're only in one area of competition, they have to fail in all the other areas. And the other areas could destroy them totally. Like in this case, a lot of them lost a lot of money. Mark Twain, unbelievable writer, comedian, and everything. But he didn't know about money either. And therefore he made investments, he lost a lot of money, and in his later years, he wanted to make up for the debts. He was going to sell the rights to his books, and somebody talked him out of it. They didn't talk him out of it. He would have sold the rights. Meanwhile, he made a lot of money on that. And in an old age when he should have been relaxing, he had to go on the talk. Then they used to have groups of people that goes to the city. From the city, it was a big attraction. They used to speak, jokes, comedy, or whatever they used to speak. But in an old age, even though he was successful, he still had to, he failed. Because he only competed in one single area. He only knew that one single area. Success in life, you cannot know only one area. I know teachers, unbelievable teachers. Really, they are the best teachers you could find. They fail. Why? Because they don't know how to play politics with a principal. Success will not do you any good if you don't know how to play politics. That's it. So therefore, even though they might be successful in their field, you see, but because they don't know every aspect of life, they have to fail, you see. That's one type of failure. But then there's an essential failure where the emotion itself destroys you, the very emotion that you're striving for, okay? Right. The thing is that, every person, when you have, let's say, greed, right? So you're striving for, you have a certain picture what you're going to have at the end. that you're going to have all this wealth. Or if, like Hitler, he was going to have all this power. He was trying to satisfy something within him, right? But the thing is, at the beginning, he's still in reality. Why is he still in reality? Because he knows he has to work out plans of war, and he's involved in the activity. You see, he's involved in the activity, you see? But at a certain point of success, the emotion, what he was striving for, comes in, and he becomes that great person. What he was striving for, whatever feeling, whatever emotion he was striving for, and he enjoys the glory of that, and he acts based on that, he stops thinking about the actions. In other words, like this. In other words, let's say, for instance, like Hitler, he wanted grandeur, greatness, beyond anybody else in the past, right? But at the beginning, he knew he had a certain means to get there, so his mind was on the means. But as soon as he felt that emotion is being satisfied, he naturally turned towards the result which he was looking for, that I'm that great person. So then he didn't need the means anymore, and his mind did not go to strategy. He is the great person, that's all. You see? Now, once that happens, then that guy is out of reality. He's dead. He's going to have to fail. You see? The same thing, like a person feels, let's say, for instance, you steal once. You have a terrible fear of getting caught, right? Then you don't get caught. There's a certain feeling, see? I don't get caught. I'm a smart guy. So you do it again. And that success makes you feel secure again. And then you feel that you're not going to get caught, and then you stop. See, but at the beginning, you're working out all the details in every robbery. But as you feel that security, that I am the great person, so then you don't have to watch it, because since I'm the great person, I'll make it out of it. So you forgot to work out the details. That's when you fail.
Well, that's like you're doing a job that's dangerous, or you're driving, and you become cavalier because you've been driving so well and so far.
That's right. You feel very good about it. There's a certain point where you work on a particular emotion, and that particular emotion keeps building, but then suddenly you reach the result. That feeling of success makes you feel that I'm not going to get caught. I'm not going to get caught. You see? So it comes out there's three types of failures. Right? But they're not immediate. One type of failure is that your nature is that you make decisions based on the situation that you're in. So every situation, you scream or yell or nice or sweet or whatever you're going to do based on the situation, you're soon going to come to a situation that you're going to react incorrectly. Alright? The next one is where you're involved, you're really very good in one area, but not in any other area of life. There's two types of destructions. One is the point, because you don't know about other things. That other thing will kill you, you see? And then the other one is that once you're driving in a certain emotion, the feeling of success makes you feel that I will not get caught. So if you feel you're not going to get caught, you're not going to worry about the details to work out the details, okay? Now, the thing is that you'll notice that all three are not immediate. On the contrary, if you lie in school and you got caught immediately and you were punished immediately, I want you to know that's a godsend, because then you don't feel that success. But when a guy lies and feels he can get away with it, then he turns to lying to get away. He's going to get caught sooner or later, you see? Now, the thing is that it's all down the line. A lot of these things could be 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line. You just don't know. But when it happens, you're going to be hit and hit hard, you see? Whether it's with child raising, whether it's your profession, whether whatever, whether it's money, whether it's a spouse or whatever. The thing is that you don't know when it's going to happen if you do not think, if you do not, it's not real to you, these ideas. And the thing is that I want you to know the emotions will find ways out. You must go over these ideas, and for the emotions, it's not enough just understanding the ideas, but you must start making up illustration after illustration after illustration of cases where it did happen. I mean, look at Elvis Presley, the king. I mean, any person you take, you see, if he's the guy that's traveling in, like, all his energy in one way, then that's one type of destruction. See, the regular person that just pulled this way or that way and the other way, you'll see they're pulled according to anxiety and to drugs and to this, to that, whatever. They're pulled to different things. Okay? Oh, you mean an unconscious thing that they have to fail? That their own failure. Yeah, well, that's the situation. In other words, the situation destroyed them. They made a decision based on the situation, not on reality. You see what I mean? That their emotions make decisions based on certain situations. You see what I mean? I think, I'm not 100% sure here, but I think that, I mean, if you have any case that does not fit in, please tell me, because I'd like to see if there's any other principle. Because the thing is, I think these are the only three. If there are any others, please, please let me know. Well, if there's any, what? The three? Basically, it's three. There's one is that the guy is guided by situations. Situations, whatever the situation is, he reacts to the situation. If you're a kid, you react to control. If you become a parent, you react to kids not listening to you. Right? I mean, whatever it is, you see, whatever the situation is. That's one thing. The second type is that you driving in one direction. There's one emotion that guides you throughout, pushing you, driving you. And you keep building in that emotion. There's a statement, says Rashi, something, I don't know the exact word, says, Zuhi Dako Shel Yetzara. This is the ways of the Yetzara. Today he tells you to do this, tomorrow he tells you to do that, until you worship Avodah Zara. You see? So the thing is that there's a progression in emotions too. You see, Rashi is illustrating where the emotion itself reaches a point of psychosis, where it takes over you, where you don't believe that anything could happen to you. But I'm saying there's another kind. Yeah, I'm all three are ego. There's no question about it. No question about it. And the third one is that since you are competing in one area and you're very successful in that area of competition, so all the life is not one area. Then you're going to have all the other areas, the odds are you're going to fail. It's just a matter of time before one of them will destroy you. Yes. Yeah, it's all the way I was raised, that's the way is the best way, and therefore I will not change. If you tell a person this, rationally you should change overnight. Goodbye. Right? But it doesn't work that way because the emotions don't give up the itself, the way it views itself so easy. And therefore I said to affect the emotion, these three ideas must be very clear in your mind and you must see constant illustrations, and whenever you do an act, try to work out, that's without thought. Let's say you work it out, you'll find that you'll see that if I follow this way, you work it out, what are the possible consequences? You can't know exactly. To know exactly the precise situation or when you're going to be destroyed, that you'd have to be a Navi. You see? But in general, you could work out the consequences. You see? Or you could find many illustrations. Like, for instance, sometimes I read about these great Hollywood stars or rock stars. They become really big, and suddenly they said they're looking for themselves. They're searching around to find themselves. I said, what do you mean they're searching around? They always knew what they wanted. They put all their energy in one thing, right? And they drove themselves for this one thing and they made it. They should be happy as people. Suddenly when they make it, then they're looking for themselves. Then they start to look for themselves. Who are they? Why? Because there again, the success. You see, the success makes them realize that what is it? You see, they're really looking for a mystical thing. Something in their self, which is not real, doesn't exist. When they get there, it's not there. They push and they become a certain point that's become psychotic, you see. It becomes a psychotic and they start looking like Elvis Presley started looking in the mystical world and that didn't help him. He wasn't happy. He couldn't find it. Success wasn't enough. So he started looking here and he starts looking there until he found it in drugs. Now he has peace. Yes.
In the case
just that that success wasn't enough to make them happy.
I don't think any. Well, you see.
You're saying that it turned. I'm just giving another possibility that it could be that you're saying that it, that they followed one thing and they thought that, that it was it. I'm saying that when they got there, that it wasn't fulfilling because that was only a very small piece of the party.
I see. Yeah, but what is the practical destruction? In what way were they destroyed? What did they do? Were they destroyed because they started feeling I'm invincible? Or were they destroyed because the, when they got into that situation, then they moved to another situation, and another situation, another, just according to the situation?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't know what.
Well, that you'll have to check. I don't know. I mean, that's what you have to check. It's going to have to be, I think it really has to be one of these three ways. I think so, yes. What? Yeah.
Could that be like an example of the third category, where you're stuck in one small detail and you don't go outside?
You're right. The same. I told you that second two is a subdivision of where you're pushing your energy in one area. I said it's subdivided. There's two ways of being destroyed where you push your energy in one area. Either the emotion itself will cause you to become totally out of the world of reality, then you'll be destroyed because you feel I can't fail. There's certain success after a while. You feel I can't fail. And then you stop working out the details, and that's when you do fail. And you feel bad. The other kind is because I'm so involved in one area, I'm failing in other areas, and it suddenly comes in without realizing and destroys me. Yeah, but there's two causes for the failure. One is the emotion that's driving you, makes you become a certain level where you're out of the world of reality. That's what makes you fail. Or one is you're so involved in here that there are other factors in life that you don't notice that destroys you. I'm just saying it's one emotion, but the area of destruction, there's two types that could hit that type of person from two different angles. I'm defining it in terms of the destruction. Not in, I said it's a subdivision. It's one emotion. But the form that the destruction could take is from two different angles, either from the emotion itself or because they're ignorant about life in general except this area.
So then, I'm very depressed now. Because,
well, that's good.
I see these things in me.
Right, but that's good, I'll tell you why, because that means it's real to you. It has to be. It has to be when it becomes real to you. It has to be a terrible shock to the emotions, and you have to feel depressed because you're going to realize that you have to give up part of your ego, part of the way you live.
Yeah, but the question is, you said the way you do it is by constant example. I don't understand. In other words, what am I supposed to do? Practically, what are we supposed to do?
Once you see the way you're acting, you have to take illustration and
you see it in your life. That's all, again and again. Until that, in other words, and then what you have to start doing is change your way of life. In other words, when you see that this action is going to cause failure, so then you're going to have to move to another. You're going to have to change your way of life. Don't try and change 25 areas at once. You're going to fail. That doesn't work that way. Try and take one area and say, I'm going to work on this because I see the importance, and then work on that, and then the next. But take the easiest one first. Start with the easiest, because it's whichever it is. It's changing. It's a very difficult trip. Okay? That's the first view of breaking it down. Yes? I hear you. Just a minute. I'm not sure of the emotion there. Just a minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rashi said even that
Right. Right. I'll tell you, I don't know. You'll have to work that out. I don't know. I mean, there's 25 different ways, you know. I mean, you could ask me in every case where somebody failed, but I don't know all the factors. I leave the details to you. You can check it out, work it out with guys in the yeshiva here, you know what I mean? I really don't know. We get involved in that area, you know what I mean? We could spend here in hours, find out what was this sin, and what was the thing, what was the emotion, what happened, what brought about this consequence. Okay, you'll have to work it out with, or maybe after class if you want to spend a few hours, then we could do some research on it. But that's a separate area, interpreting a particular area. Unless somebody has a quick answer offhand, but if that's a very that knows the area very well, then fine.
Which of the three it is?
Well, don't approach it that way. That's not a way to approach it. Just analyze it and just see in your mind what. Check it out after your own creativity has worked it out. Don't start following categories, because then you'll never discover any other, if there are others. Yes?
What about basically a perfected guy, and then all of a sudden, you know, he lives a fairly philosophical life.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like, he falls into a situation that's a tremendous temptation. In other words, he doesn't live by that emotion. He lives by...
You see, you're talking about a different ballpark, but the thing is, it's the same thing. It's a different. I want you to know, tzaddik is a different ballpark. You have to talk about it differently. It's a totally different framework. I mean, we have a lot of tzaddikim that have consequences for their actions, and there you would see the same thing, the same type of thing. You're going to find the emotion that destroyed them. But it's a different ballpark. It's hard to compare, okay? Right. That's, yes.
So then
he's going to fail, right?
But the situation is not making him fail, and he can feel emotions. It's a societal pressure.
What do you mean by societal pressure? Does he do an act?
He
does an act based on the societal pressure.
He believes in faith in the name of God for whatever reason.
Well, I don't care what mistake he makes, but he's telling me he made an error.
But it's not based on situation, because it's not a situation which he did.
When I say situation, there's no situation you do. You're in situation. You don't create situation. I mean, you can. But the thing is that you're in a situation. I don't care if you're in Iran, in Russia, in China, or in the United States. You're in situations, and you're reacting to it. Rabbi Akiva acted one way to being tortured, and another person will act totally different than Rabbi Akiva. Same situation.
Yes, but just because you believe in one religion, you're living, let's say, in Israel, you're right. And if you believe you live in Iran, you do the same thing, you're wrong.
Right, that's a certain feeling.
No, the point is, the person who grew up over there,
right,
he has no reason to leave his religion and join Judaism, so therefore he thinks he's doing the right thing. So he's not doing anything wrong. He's living a correct life.
Yeah.
He's living a righteous life. Yeah, he'll pick up a gun and shoot and try to kill me.
Yeah, right.
But he feels he's correct. It's not a situation he's creating something. It's on the flip side.
So you have to be very, very careful. There isn't the human being that doesn't feel he's right. Everybody feels they're right.
I'm agreeing with that.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
But the only thing what I'm saying is right is objectively right.
Okay.
In other words, let's say I feel I'm right. Let's put it this way. Hitler felt he was right that the Jews were destroying the economy.
Right.
And they were subversives, and they were destroying the world, and therefore you had to kill all the Jews, and he felt he was right. So you're going to say, well, that was his opinion, and in his framework, he was right. Is that what you're going to say?
There are people who say that.
Yeah.
What?
A lot of people say that, yeah.
I understand a lot of people say that, but is it right?
Is that right to say that? It's not right, but according to the way you're defining it, it might be.
Why am I defining it? I'm not defining it.
A person's breakdown. The situation will create a certain emotion.
And he acts according to that emotion. That's his mistake. Of course he thinks he's right. When a parent beats her child for dirtying the rug or for dirtying the floor, she feels she's right. She thinks she's training a child. I'm training you. I'm teaching you how to be a good child. Beat the heck out of the kid. That's what she thinks. But that's not the real emotion. Of course she's not going to say, I'm taking vengeance on my child for dirtying the floor. She's not going to say that. That's what it is. You know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
All right. That's one way of folks. You don't see it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I realize that. That's why I'm asking what the...
And you just move the question in case I can't answer, and therefore you move the question. It's okay. I just don't see how to answer it.
I see. All right. I hear what you're bothering. Okay. The thing is that it's in human nature never to feel wrong. That's why tshuva is such a difficult thing, because the person can't see he's wrong. But that doesn't mean he's not wrong. Right? Therefore, I'm saying consequences is not on what he thinks. You're saying, see, right or wrong is not dependent on any authority. See, every human being, right and wrong is dependent on an authority. Okay? If I'm Jewish, then my authority says this is right. Therefore, I'm right, and anybody that does not act this way is wrong. If I'm brought up in China, so then Chinese, the way is right, and everything else is wrong. But my morals and ethics... jealousy is bad, then I have to see how it is that jealousy does not fit into reality. Once I see that it does not fit into reality, then it's objectively an incorrect thing. So therefore, if I'm competitive, even though I might use other terms, but the fact is, since it does not fit into reality, I must fail. In other words, let's say, for instance, a person gets up on a roof and says, I could fly. And he jumps off the roof. Lo and behold, he finds that he's dead. Right? Well, I mean, he thought he could fly. Now, the mistake was is that his emotions told him he could do something against reality. See, when we say that you're going to fail, we're not pointing fingers that you're a failure. We're not trying to say you're a jerk. We're saying that if you do something not in line with reality, then you must suffer the consequences. You see what I mean? I'll give you another illustration of the destruction of not seeing the whole picture, right? Right? A kid wants to build a model airplane, right? The only table he could find is his parents' $10,000 dining room table, right? Parents aren't home, and he sits down and he makes this big, beautiful airplane, and he feels success. Not only that, he's so proud that as soon as his parents come in, he shows them, look what I did. And he can't understand why they're beating the heck out of him. You see? He didn't see that he did anything wrong, but the fact is, he went against reality. He destroyed a $10,000 table. That's what I'm saying. Realizing it or not makes no difference. You could jump off a roof. You might not realize it, but you're dead.
Right.
That's all. I'm saying, see, if you tell me that ethics and morals is an authority, and that the Torah tells me this is right, then you could tell me that. But if I say that the morals and ethics of Torah is a reality, that the world operates like this, and you do not operate according to that reality, then I say, like any time you don't operate according to reality, you're going to suffer consequences.
There's one objective sense of reality.
Exactly.
Right, and anyone who disagrees with it, he's saying it's not a reality, and therefore they suffer consequences.
That's right. Just like anybody that does anything wrong in the physical world.
Even if they're brought up in a society which has no touch with this reality, it's their fault.
It's not a fault. See,
no,
forget about the fault.
They're going to flunk.
Forget about the term fault.
Okay,
consequence.
They're
going to suffer consequences.
Suffer
yes.
Consequences.
Absolutely.
That's
right. That's right. If they're not in line with reality, they must suffer consequences. It's not their fault. I'm not talking about fault. No fault.
No
fault. No fault consequences.
What was the just? Like you spoke about last night. Is it just that someone would be born in a society where he can't succeed?
What?
You were saying yesterday with animals that certain animals
I didn't say they don't have the ability to think it out. Who said they don't have free will? I'm saying that if they do not pull out, if they do not pull out of their society and stop to think about reality and analyze it, then they're going to fail. Yes. That's all. And no fault. No fault. They're not at fault. I'm not dealing... Fault is when you have authority. It's your fault, you don't follow the authority. I'm not talking fault. I'm talking consequences. You see? Once you see it that way, you see that it's a reality. If you go over and over this idea in your mind, you see, I can have all the excuses in the world and I can feel righteous. That will not help you. The guy cannot control himself. He will suffer the consequence. Not his fault. Not his fault. No fault. It was no fault of Yosef that he was imprisoned in a damp, dank prison for 12 years. And Avraham ben Aramam says that that's why he died young. No fault. Can't blame him. But he was there. He suffered the consequences of the physical world, and that's it. Okay? Besides which, I think he also said, because he had the troubles of running a king, pressure also to shorten your life. That was his business. But anyway, but it's not fault. You can't put fault. That's it. It's a fact. We're not talking fault. We're talking consequences. Does that help it? Does that clarify? I'm glad you followed up. I think that clarifies it for everybody. Okay? Right. That's one aspect, okay? We're talking consequences in three ways that you will fail. Okay. And once you see that it's a reality, that's it. In other words, you can't say, well, I'm a tzaddik, God is going to protect me. I don't see it. Not according to Avraham ben Aramam. He does protect you in a certain ways, but you have to know when and where. Okay.
When you quote the Avraham ben Aramam, where are you quoting it from?
That's a good question. I remember. I think it was in, he has there's a two-volume book, something Pathway, I forgot the name. I think I saw it there, but I'm not sure. Okay. What? Yeah, Highways to Perfection. I think so. I think I saw it there. Okay. But anyway, that's the first thing. Okay. Second thing is, we do see some people for short periods that are successful. Okay? In other words, for 10 years, 15 years, we don't see all the consequences all the time, but somehow we see, superficially, we see they're successful. Okay? So therefore, instead of analyzing failure, what I would like to do is analyze what you call success. Let me give you an illustration. I one time heard, I didn't see it in writing, but it's good for an illustration whether it's true or not. But this is where they say that why was Babe Ruth such a good hitter? Okay? They say he was a good hitter because his eyesight was such that he could wait a split second, a fraction of a second longer before he had to make his decision whether they'll take the ball or not. Okay? Let's assume it's true. Okay? And now the thing is that that means that if I wanted to say what was his success, I wouldn't put him in the Hall of Fame of baseball. I'd put him in the Hall of Fame of eyesight. Okay? Now, if you would tell that to Babe Ruth... Now, you laugh. Why is it so funny? Because, you know, if you would tell that to Babe Ruth, he would not feel good about himself. Somehow, he feels good about himself because, see, when you're successful, if you watch your emotion, when you're successful in a competition, you have a certain overall feeling of success, period. Right? But you'll notice, like, for instance, let's say, for instance, there's two people that are competing and the guy that loses. He says, the only reason why I lost, I had, quote, a bad day. Right? Now, the next time he loses, he doesn't say, I had a good day. He says, see how great I am. Right? Now, the question is, which is in reality? Is he great? Or did he have... The other one of them was true. The other is not.
But he lost both times?
Yeah. What? He wins the second time. Second time he wins. He doesn't say, I had a good day. He wouldn't attach it to one quality. But the truth is, whenever you're successful, there is only one reason why you're successful. For instance, I know a guy. He was around 20 years old, and for quite a number of years, he was smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, and he jogged a 5-minute mile. Right? Now, the thing is there are other people that are in very good health. They eat healthy and they jog every day. They'll never run a 5-minute mile. What's the difference? One person has lung capacity, one person doesn't. So, therefore, are you going to say when two people race, you're going to say, you have better lung. Well, the guy that loses will say that, but I'd like to see the guy that wins say, well, I won because I have better lungs. He's not going to say that. He's going to say, I'm a better person than you. I beat you. Period. But once you define the quality, the success doesn't... See, because success is a fantasy. It's a certain feeling of an overall being, and therefore I'm only interested in success. But once you define the factor of that success, then you lose that overall being. You see? So the thing is that when you start defining success that way, then what you start seeing is that beating and competition. And by the way, people become wealthy, it's only one thing, it's competition. It's another area. Once they make enough money to live on, beyond that, when they start salting it away for years, I mean, you know, packing it away, then that's already competition. They're in competition. They're beating others. And you know what I mean? Person that just as important for a millionaire to make a $1 million deal as if he played a dollar game with you, a dollar bet, is important for him to, he puts the same energy. Because it's a competition. Each time he has to beat the guy. You see? So if you analyze the precise quality, what made the guy win, then you'll notice that there is no real success in competition. There's only success in life. Life itself in general. What is practically the best way of operating in this situation? That's success. And avoiding the consequences. But that feeling of success which fakes you out, you see, that's the dangerous thing. You must remove that fake out of that success. You see? Competition. You see? That's...
You haven't showed why that's bad.
What?
You really haven't showed why it's bad. I mean, yeah, so a guy has better lung capacity and he can't admit that he's got better lung capacity and he wins the race.
Right.
But like, why is that a bad thing?
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that's not what the guy spent years of training for to win that race. He spent years of
Showing out of certain that the greatness is not in the, it's not a luck from the goblet. One aspect. That aspect,
it sort of makes the whole person feel good. And once you feel good about all over, then you don't have to watch all aspects of life. You assume that you've made it, you see? Which is the cause for one of the type of failures that we spoke about. But the thing is, you must analyze what that breakdown success into its component. That's one thing. Okay? That's one analysis. And the second type that you have to say is, why do I constantly need success in competition? Why is it that I need it? You see? What would you say? There's only one reason. Because I really don't hold that I'm really great. I hold that I'm not great, and therefore I have to constantly prove that I am great. So therefore you spend your whole life trying to prove that you are something, that to counteract something that you do hold, that you're nothing, right? And the first one is a fantasy, and the second one is a fantasy, and your whole life you go in competition. I beat somebody, he tried to cut me down, I had a better cut, and then I'll tell him, or he told me this, and I answered this. You see, I had a better cut than him, and I feel good about it. That's one type of competition. And the competition is in tossing, shooting cards. I get more heads than you, and you get more tails, whatever. Like, it's crazy things, you know what I mean? Like, you hit a thing, you try to hit the bell, I hit the bell, you miss the bell. I mean, like, every single thing, you know? And you feel so good about yourself. And if you fail, you feel sick. You got to get back. You got to make it back. And it's going, oh, because you have a feeling that you're nothing, which is not true to begin with. And then you try to prove that when you're successful for that moment, you feel that you're great, which is also not true, which has nothing to do with, that's not the way to evaluate yourself altogether. But the thing is this is the way you spend your whole life. And then you work at, but then you suddenly realize that these things are crazy. So what you do is you come up and you work to become a multimillionaire, and you're doing the same thing that a kid is when he's playing with his cards. He's beating everybody else out. That's all. Yes.
Right. Basketball player, receiver, backwear.
Right.
It's good to play once in a while.
Right.
What you're doing is they're competing with each other.
Right.
There's
right.
No question about it.
Right.
You know, a guy doesn't just go like 250 pounds. He goes down 300 and beat the other guy.
Right.
Right. So we do say that sometimes it's good to give in to that. So what is barometer? I mean, because what you're doing is, and that's what you are giving into.
Right.
Now we're saying it's bad.
All right. That's a good question. That's a good question. All right. All right. The answer is like this. When it comes to halacha, that you have to do an act, unless you have a good, strong neuroses, you know what I mean? You have to do, you learn the halacha, then you have to do the act. That's it. A normal person could do an act. You have to put on your tefillin. You put on your tefillin. You can't go out on Shabbos. So I don't go out. I don't carry on Shabbos. Whatever. Right? So an act. Normal human beings could do the act whether they like it or not. Person could have his medicine. He doesn't like it. He takes it. Right? But here we're talking about that the consequence is going to come 10, 15 years down the line. That means you have 10, 15 years to make a change. We're talking about a change in personality. And therefore, I wouldn't tell anybody here to make an act based on tonight's discussion. I wouldn't tell you to change one iota of your life. But I'm saying that as you go over this idea again, and again and again, and as it becomes real to you, you naturally will do these things. You'll start doing it. In certain areas you'll force yourself. Let's say for instance you stop to think, like we gave an illustration yesterday about educating our children, and let's say that thing becomes real to you. You say, really, well, I'm going to have to sit down and study what's the best way. And you start talking, and you just talk with your different rabbeim, and they advise you what to start doing to get this information. Now the thing is that it became real to you and you started doing it, you see? But you can't, but I would say that you should repress yourself from competition. The removal of competition is 20 years down the line. Maybe. You know? But the thing is that slowly but surely, as the reality of all these things come true, you'll start making decisions based on it. You'll think it through, become clearer slowly but surely. It's not like a halacha. Halacha, you got to do the act. Tell you to do the act, that's all you have to do it. You do the act. Whatever framework you do it in, you feel good, you don't feel good, you're upset, whatever, you do the act. But you can't force yourself to change your personality. You see? An act we can tell you to do. But we can't force you to change your personality. Changing a personality takes chachma. No force. Chachma changes the personality.
So how would you just an example?
Well, in your particular case, you're going to have to discuss it with somebody who knows you better than I did. You know what I mean? What it is. If some people will tell, will send them, I one time heard a Rosh Hashiva in Tells. Rosh Hashiva tell the guy that was learning in the base medrash all day, tell him I want you to go out during lunch and play, we used to play baseball. Tell him to go out to lunch and play baseball. This is a, one of the older guys in the yeshiva. He felt he needed an athlete. One guy he'll tell to play more, one guy he'll tell to play less. It depends. If we, you know what I mean? Yeah, a person has to know, and you, well, you have to have an advisor. You don't know yourself. You see? That's in changing your personality. That's only Chachma to do it. And the Chachma is not, not being, every one of you I'm sure understand now. If you question me, then you understand what I said. If you, I gave you a test, you might get off, you spelled the word wrong, but basically you get the good mark, okay? But the thing is that that's not what you're out for. That's competition again, you see? What you're out for is to change your personality, not to get more Chachma, but to make the Chachma real to you. And that's only by going over in your mind, discussing it with your friends, seeing more insight, seeing how it works in other people's lives, seeing how it works in your life, and over again and again and again until you're sick of it, and then you quit for a day or two because you can't take it. You can't take it for a week and you take a break, but you come back to it. And that's the way it goes. And that's perfection of the soul. Going over the idea, making the idea real to you. What? But I'm not. But don't memorize. And at any time, don't just think the idea. You must think it through, like from step one, step by step. It must always be the mind working, because only the true idea that the mind really sees affects the emotions. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yes. But by repetition, I don't mean any memory at all. Thinking it through the ideas, right. Yeah, that's for the mind. The mind sees it once, it knows it. That's it. But here I'm talking to the. You mean you want to know the dynamics, how it works? Right.
You have the inertia, the emotion.
That's the emotion.
They've been going for the past 25 years in a certain way. The Yitzhar and Lev Ram and Urav.
There should be a certain admittance of a person. Yeah, that's true. Right away.
They have a certain experiment with animals, right? Like they ding a bell every time a piece of food comes down. And then they ding the bell with no food come out, they react to it, right? Okay? And the thing is, you're really conditioned to operate in a certain way, okay? But that condition that you're conditioned to operate is really... In other words, let me scratch that, okay? All right. Anyway, the thing is, let's scratch it. Let me start from a different point. Let's say, for instance, you have a doll, right? Child has a doll, okay? Child loses the doll. The child is really upset. But you'll notice that they're upset the first day, but not the second day. Or the second day is less upset, the third day less, then it goes away. What happened in that time? Okay? Now, rationally, what should happen when the child loses the doll, if the child was totally rational, without emotions, say, I do not have the doll to play with, therefore I should find something else to play with. That's all. right? Why is it that he or she spends so much time crying over the other one? Until they reach a point that they don't think of that anymore, suddenly you see, but sometimes some children take weeks, but it's suddenly they don't think about it, and you see they're totally involved in somebody else. They totally forgot about it. Even if you got it back, they wouldn't be interested in it anymore. What happened? What happened? The answer is that the emotion learns reality by being stopped from that reality. In other words, like this. My mind knows that the doll is not there, but the emotions don't. The emotions don't know that, of course, the emotions work. What I wish to be true is true. That's the way the emotions work. Whatever I wish, whatever I want, I have. There's no such thing as the word no to the emotions. So therefore, the emotions want the doll. But however, whenever you reach out for the doll, reality tells the emotion that it's not there. So when it's reaching out and it's not satisfied, the emotion is unhappy. Yeah, that's called, well, when the doll was broken, automatically it's cold turkey, right? Right?
And it's like I can compare it to when somebody starts to stop smoking.
That's right. There's an emotional test. See, smoking.
By the way, it's emotional. It's not a physical thing, it's an emotional thing.
That's right.
So when the person knows that he can't have it at first, that's when he goes to all pain. And then eventually, even though you always have that longing for a cigarette, eventually you'll overcome it.
Yes.
Right,
right. In other words, what?
Smoking's physical.
It doesn't matter to me whether it's physical. I'm not going
to
get involved in that argument, but it's definitely, even if it's physical, a lot of emotions. Can't say there are no emotions attached to the physical. You understand?
You don't have to go to a hospital
and stop smoking, so it's not physical. Yeah. Gentlemen, it does not matter to the argument. It really doesn't make a difference. Even if it's physical, there's definitely emotions attached to it. You know what I mean? There has to be in other words, the emotions are also learn reality, but it learns reality through experience. It has to experience that the thing is not real. Now, what I'm asking you to do here is make it not real by virtue of going over in the mind that what you desire to do now is totally destructive, which is not should not be real in your world.
I think you have to, okay, I just want to say, like, an extreme case. Let's say a person is a gymnast.
What?
Gymnast, like 4 years, they have these both gymnasts, whatever.
Right. Right.
Okay. Now, the guy still wants to stay in shape.
Right.
So he can't do what he could do.
Right.
The situation where there's going to be a certain, like, morning, they say, for something like that might happen.
Right.
But let's say the person still, I mean, you could say that the person should try to detach himself and he wouldn't accept him, that's it. But let's say the person still wants to stay in a certain amount of shape. So he's constantly in the situation every day where he's.
Slow. If the guy cannot operate, if the loss of the hand does not let him change at all, that guy is stuck at that point that the emotions tell him that the hand is here and that physically it's not here, the guy will never be able to operate and he can't get rid of that. But if at a certain point his emotions of being a gymnast, whatever it is still there, but he takes it out of that area, but now he races with the wheelchair, you see what I mean? So then he just replaced it like a child replaces it with a different toy. If he couldn't change, if he couldn't get out of that state, which there is a certain people that they can't, reality will not let him get out of it. Like there's certain people, let's say by a woman, her husband dies, she can't remarry, she can't, she'll, it's like going against her husband. Like it's like she's betraying her husband if she would get married. That means that her husband is still alive, is real to the emotions. Never died. Hey, gentlemen, if I'll answer questions after Marv, okay? because it really is way after, and I don't want to hold people back. It's not fair. But for those that want to continue the discussion, I don't mind. I'll stay here later, okay?